It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's our state capitol report. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call announced last week that the state had filed a lawsuit against Purdue Pharma, the manufacturer of the opioid painkiller OxyContin. Other states that are part of the legal challenge include Iowa, Kansas, Maryland, and West Virginia. Attorney General Call spoke with Central Time executive producer Judith Sears Poisson about the lawsuit.
Attorney General Call, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So what does the state's lawsuit allege happened with Purdue Pharma?
So first, I think it's important to talk about the context of the opioid epidemic. What we allege is that the conduct of Purdue Pharma and of Richard Sackler, who is a former president and co-chair of the board of Purdue Pharma, engaged in deceptive marketing practices that both changed the general culture with respect to the prescription of opioids, and in particular was meant to increase sales of OxyContin and other opioids. And the effects of that epidemic, as your listeners know, have just been devastating for Wisconsin and for people around the country. From 2000 to 2017, there are over 7,500 Wisconsinites who lost their lives to an overdose involving opioids. In 2017, there were over 900 opioid overdose deaths. And from 2015 to 2016, the number, the overdose death rate in Wisconsin for drug overdoses increased by 24.5%. And what we allege in the complaint is that this was not inevitable. This was the result, in part due to conduct by Richard Sackler and Purdue Pharma, to undertake a concerted and successful effort to change the public's understanding and increase the use of opioids by misleadingly downplaying the risks and overstating the benefits of those drugs.
And so what do you hope to accomplish with this lawsuit?
First and foremost, it's important that we hold accountable those whose unlawful conduct contributed to the opioid epidemic. I think it's important that we have accountability, first and foremost, because it's the right thing to do to enforce our laws when they've been broken. But also, I think it's really important that we understand what led to this epidemic, because I think that's going to help us as we work to address it. And it's going to hopefully help us work to prevent a future epidemic. And then another part of this is that Purdue Pharma and Richard Sackler made substantial amounts of money as a result of the sale of opioids. And the consequences of that are being felt in all sorts of areas here in Wisconsin. And recovering from Purdue some of the resources that it has made off of the sale of opioids is really important as we work to expand access to substance abuse treatment and take other actions to remedy some of the harms from the opioid epidemic.
Now, Wisconsin is not the only state to pursue this kind of litigation. Iowa, Kansas, Maryland, and West Virginia, on the same day as Wisconsin did, filed their own lawsuits. Are you working with those other attorneys general to make your suits work together as much as possible?
You're right that there are five states that all filed suit on the same day. It was a bipartisan group of AGs, and one of the reasons that we filed at the same time is to convey the seriousness with which we are taking these cases and our state's responses to the opioid epidemic. Four of those five states named as a defendant at least one member of the Sackler family in the cases that they filed. And more broadly, my predecessor announced that Wisconsin is part of a multi-state investigation into opioid manufacturers. And I've announced that we've also joined a multi-state investigation into opioid distributors. And it's important that we work together across states to the extent that we can, because this is an epidemic that has been national in scale. And having AGs across the country working together to work to address this epidemic and to work to get accountability, I think is going to make us more effective in achieving those goals.
We're talking with Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call about the lawsuit that was filed on Thursday against Purdue Pharma for what is seen as their contribution to the increasing opioid epidemic. And Attorney General Call, you talked about how the opioid epidemic has impacted Wisconsin, other states as well. Is that in large part why you really prioritized this lawsuit?
I think important that we have accountability for the opioid epidemic. That is one of the factors here. The other is, you know, we've alleged that Purdue engaged in repeated violations of the law. In 2007, the state of Wisconsin entered into a consent judgment with Purdue, but despite stopping engaging in deceptive marketing practices after that consent judgment, we've alleged that Purdue continued with those practices, and the consequences, the harm to Wisconsin that has resulted, and the harm to the country that has resulted from the actions of those who contributed to this epidemic, including Purdue and Richard Sackler, have been severe. It was an intentional effort to downplay the risks of addiction and the dangers that go with opioid prescriptions, as well as an effort to inflate the benefits of opioids. And the overall goal here was to change the culture with respect to the prescription of those drugs. The prescription rate for opioids increased dramatically from the mid-90s to up to today. We've been making a bit of progress in reducing the prescription rates, which is a step in the right direction, but we still have a long way to go. But that big change in the culture with respect to the prescription of opioids is in part a result of these misleading statements, misleading marketing efforts by Purdue, is what we've alleged in the complaint.
And Oklahoma settled its lawsuit with Purdue Pharma, and the company paid the state about $270 million as a result. Would you like to see a similar payout from the company for Wisconsin, or are you looking for more impact than that?
You know, one of the options that remains available is if there's a settlement on terms that we believe are in the best interest of the state. That's something we'd certainly consider. But I think it is important that as we approach this case against Purdue Pharma and also the multi-state investigations, you know, we're going to be focused on making sure that we maximize the recovery that the state of Wisconsin gets so that more money can go to fund efforts to address the opioid epidemic. More money can go into things, hopefully, like expanding access to substance abuse treatment, efforts to prevent people from becoming addicted in the first place, and efforts to enforce our laws against anybody who is, for example, distributing heroin or other dangerous narcotics across county lines and across state lines. So, number one, maximizing our recovery is important. But number two, making sure that there is a clear accounting here of what led to this epidemic and that people know what led to the devastation that we've had is really important so that we don't repeat this epidemic and so we can learn from that and hopefully use the knowledge that we've gained to respond as effectively as possible to the epidemic.
And as we wrap up, Attorney General Call, the lawsuit was filed on Thursday. What are the next steps? What should we be watching for?
So the case will proceed in the same way that other cases in state court do. There will at some point be a scheduling order issued in the case, so there will be discovery, and we'll move forward. And from there, you know, our hope is that this case moves forward relatively swiftly because, you know, we are ready to move forward with it. We believe we've got a very strong case, and, you know, our hope is to resolve it and ultimately to recover funds so that we can help work to address the opioid epidemic.
Well, Attorney General Call, thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, we check in on the activities of the Committee on Joint Finance. That was the State Attorney General Josh Call talking with WPR's Judith Sears-Poisson. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer-Kent. It's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer-Kent. As our state capitol report continues, we'll hear about the recent gathering of Wisconsin state Republicans. They had their annual convention, and they were talking about what happened in the last election and what they can do about it in the future. We'll also hear about a recently announced increase in state tax revenue and what people want to do with that. And we'll talk about the Joint Committee on Finance, Wisconsin's budget writing legislative committee. They had a really busy week last week. What would you like the state to do with the extra state tax revenue? Use it for workforce development, education, transportation infrastructure, tax cut, or something else entirely? How should Wisconsin lawmakers address our workforce development needs? Do we need to attract more workers to the state, increase our support in technical colleges? And how should state government handle water pollution? If you're a farmer, would you be interested in water pollution credits? That's one of the ideas being floated. Did you attend the state Republican convention? What was your experience? And are you confident that Wisconsin will vote to reelect President Trump? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email address. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. J.R. Ross is with us. He's editor at Wisconsin at WisPolitics.com. J.R., good morning. Welcome to the Ideas Network.
How are you doing today?
Well, pretty well so far, but the day isn't over yet, so we have to leave room for stuff to happen. That's the excitement of it, right? The state Republican convention was this weekend. You covered the event for WISP Politics. Talk about that a little bit. What was the goal of this year's convention?
Well, this is part of the continuing effort for Republicans to kind of dust themselves off from last fall and look ahead to 2020. Part of the presentation this weekend was about this postmortem the party did on the results of 2018. And the conclusion of that report, kind of in summary, is that they got too reliant on consultants. They relied too much on advertising. They neglected their grassroots or local party activists, the people who stuff envelopes, who, you know, make the phone calls to get people to turn out to vote, who just the people who are their troops on the ground. And they've kind of been pledging that they're not going to do that again, and they're going to re-engage these folks and get them excited. And so a lot of the talk this weekend was about how the energy they feel, especially after Brian Hagedorn won the Supreme Court race in April. That was kind of a rallying cry for them this weekend. Hagedorn, the justice-elect, actually spoke to the convention briefly Saturday morning to kind of thank them for their efforts on his behalf. And they're looking ahead to what's next. And U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, who kind of calls himself the last man standing because he's the only statewide elected Republican right now, presented a vision for the party in which, you know, he's a CPA and a manufacturer's background, he wants to bring a corporate structure to the party where the state Republican Party in Madison, that's the headquarters, you know, the corporate office, and all of these county parties are like the franchises in that there's a standard set by the state party. There does best practices. It sends, you know, communications, those kind of things, but it also holds these local parties accountable to achieving the party's goals. So we'll see if they implement that going forward, but it was all about, okay, yeah, they got their stuff handed to them in the November of 2018, but they want to get rallied and get up for 2020 because Wisconsin is going to be a key state for Donald Trump if he hopes to be reelected next year.
Well, the common political wisdom is that elections aren't won by TV commercials. They're won by who shows up to vote. Was Republican turnout lower than expected in last fall's election, or was that Democrat turnout was much higher than expected?
Well, you know, Scott Walker often talked about after his loss last fall that he got more votes in 2018 than he did in 2014. The problem was that for him, that Tony Evers got way more votes than that. So that's part of it. I mean, Republicans, it wasn't like they were completely dispirited, but they didn't show up to match the intensity of Democrats. And now the party, Republican Party, is saying that it was all about its failures to engage the grassroots, but there's also an environment out there that you have to account for that, you know, I don't know if even if they had done fewer ads and did more engagement in the parties, it would change the results because Democrats nationally just had more energy. And that's something you can't overcome sometimes. But if you think about the spread, it was less than a percentage point, like around a percentage point between Evers and Walker, and just a few hundred votes, you know, here and there across the state would add up. So there may be something to it that they didn't capture their folks, but the bottom line still is that Democrats were more excited last fall.
Saturday's convention came just days after Republicans in the Wisconsin Assembly passed four bills that would restrict abortion in Wisconsin. Why have Republicans been focusing on abortion bills lately?
Well, there are a couple things going on. One, there's a national discussion going on about this, and so they're trying to capture some of that energy. Part of this was sparked by Virginia Governor Ralph Northam's comments about late-term abortion. In a radio interview, there's also a bill in New York State, I think, about late-term abortions, and that got Republicans kind of focused on this issue. Now, the criticism has been that they had the Capitol pretty much for eight straight years, but with Governor Walker and both houses of the legislature, didn't pass these bills, so why now? It seems to be, in some ways, a way to rally that base, because it's a very important issue for the conservative base, that they're doing it for political reasons more than they are for policy reasons. Their response has been that, you know, this conversation was sparked by what's happened nationally, and they're just capturing that conversation, or getting Wisconsin part of the conversation now. Reality is, these bills are not likely to become law. Governor Evers has made clear that he's not a big fan of these things. Now, he hasn't weighed in. I'm not sure he's weighed on each individual bill, but one that they call a quote-unquote Born Alive Act that would, if a infant survives an abortion, there would be required medical attention, or there would be penalties. That bill, Evers made clear he's not a fan of and thinks there are better things to do. So the going thought in Madison is he's going to veto these bills, and this is going to be more of a political issue for 2020 than it is about getting anything signed into law.
Meanwhile, the legislature's nonpartisan budget office released an estimate last week that Wisconsin will see a $753 million jump in state tax revenue. That seems like a lot of money. Put this in perspective for us. How often do we collect more revenue than projected?
Well, this happens every budget cycle. The Fiscal Bureau does a projection in January of every odd-numbered year of how much it believes the state will take in terms of revenue for the next 2 years. So this re-estimate from May happens every 2 years where they're in the budget process and they go, okay, let's take one more look and see where are we at. And what the Fiscal Bureau picked up was that because of the change in federal tax law from 2017, they're seeing businesses try to do things a little bit differently to take advantage of these opportunities. So there's a caveat with this. It's likely what we call one-time money. What I mean by that is that businesses are making changes now that they're just going to one time, that we're going to see a big bump in corporate taxes, and after this, it's going to drop back to maybe more normal levels. So there's a little bit of a cautionary tale here for lawmakers that if you spend this money, it's not likely to come back in the next 2 years. And what I mean by that is that, you know, typically with like income taxes, for example, you know, wages gradually go up, so we kind of take in more tax revenue. So you can kind of assume that you're going to continue to see that growth. This is like a one-time pot of money. So how do you use that is a big question in capital right now, whether you want to put it aside for a rainy day, whether you want to spend it on one-time things that aren't a recurring expense, or what to do going forward. And big picture, if you pull back, we're looking at now just short of $2.9 billion in more money to spend in the next 2 years than what we had budgeted for 2017 to 19. So this latest estimate of the additional $753 million comes on top of what they had projected in January. So we've got a lot of money to spend, but it's being eaten up because costs continue to go up. And so lawmakers have to kind of balance what they want to do. Also, don't forget, they've eliminated a number of things that Tony Evers wanted to do. The governor wanted to raise taxes, for example, on business manufacturers above a certain level of income. He wanted to change some things, some other tax laws would generate some more money. You want to accept the federal money for the Medicaid expansion, which would have covered more people through that program while also saving the state money. Well, that's all been pushed away. So there's more money to spend than what we had the last 2 years, but less money to spend than what Governor Evers wanted to put on the table with his budget. So they've got to balance priorities.
So what is Governor Evers proposing to do with the new revenue?
A couple of things. One, his administration says it has the authority to take some of the money on its own without approval from the legislature and pay down some debt. I think it's like a $56 million payment that by doing that payment now, it saves $14 million in interest going forward. He wanted them to boost money for the tech college system and for workforce development, and then basically stash away the rest for a rainy day because, look, I'm not an economist, but we have had the longest sustained period of growth in our nation's history, I think. We have not had a recession since the Great Recession, quote-unquote, of 2008-9, that neck of the woods. A decade's a pretty long good period of growth. At some point, there's going to be a recession. The question is when. And the more you have that rainy day fund, the more you can tap that to account for what would be a drop in revenues, because when there's recessions, people lose jobs. That means less revenue for the state, increased costs for things like unemployment and other things like that. Mm-hmm. So the more cushion you have, the easier to get through one of those bumpy periods.
We'll continue our discussion of what we might do with a state tax revenue. And we'll find out from J.R. Ross what the Republicans want to do with it. J.R. Ross is editor for WisPolitics.com. We want to hear from you. What do you think state lawmakers ought to focus on as budget deliberations continue? 800-642-1234. Where our conversation continues after this news. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's our state capital report. The legislature's Joint Finance Committee is working on the state budget. Last week, they acted on a host of issues, including financing for the state technical college system. We're talking about what they've done so far, what's still to come, including what the Republicans want to do with a little bit of extra money coming into the state's coffers. J.R. Ross is our guest. He's editor at WisPolitics.com. What do you want to see state lawmakers focus on as the budget process continues? Share your thoughts on the state budget at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's start the segment with a call from Tom in Burlington. Tom, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, I think if we're going into recession, we better be ready with some capital projects and have them ready to go. In other words, it takes 10 months or 11 months to get a project off the ground, and if we have to infuse money in there, these projects should be ready. So we maybe have an A list and a B list, and be ready. If we fix our roads, we're going to stop the cost of car repairs. People don't realize the hidden cost in bad roads. And so if we can maybe have an overall view in that direction.
All right, Tom, thanks for that. Tom, thinking we ought to take that extra money and put it into capital projects to benefit the state's infrastructure. J.R. Ross, what do you think?
Well, we have a capital budget that is kind of separate from the operating budget, but same time joined. Governor Evers proposed about $2.5 billion worth of projects in that. That would rely on about $2 billion worth of borrowing, if I remember correctly, new borrowing. Republicans have balked at that price tag, but will do something. We're not sure how big a project they will do. But in terms of, like, you know, capital project and roads, you know, that is one suggestion I heard from Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, Republican from Juneau, who said that, you know, possibly roads is one way you can spend the money because those are one-time projects. You know, if you're going to widen a road or lay down some stuff, asphalt, maybe you can use that for that. Definitely something they will consider, especially because Republicans, the one big hang-up that I see right now for them in terms of finishing this budget is going to be transportation. They've had a division among the Republican caucuses in the Assembly and the Senate over whether to do a gas tax hike to increase revenues for roads or whether to keep borrowing more money. And at this point, I don't see them with a conclusion or a final solution just yet, and that might be their one big fight coming up about this budget.
We mentioned the surplus funds coming in, tax revenues exceeding expectations, and we talked about what Governor Evers wanted to do with that. What have Republican lawmakers proposed to use the surplus for?
Largely so far, they've talked about stashing away in the budget stabilization fund. And like I said, Scott Fitzgerald talked about maybe one-time uses for roads or building projects, so they haven't committed anything just yet. They did boost funding a little bit last week for the tech college system and workforce development, but not quite as much as Evers wanted. So, for example, with the tech college system, Governor Evers' original budget proposed an $18 million increase over current funding levels from the state. He then urged lawmakers to take that to $36 million in terms of a boost, which would meet the full funding request from the tech college system. Lawmakers settled at like $25 million. So more than what Evers really proposed, but not quite as much as he wanted after the new money came in. So we're not seeing him spend a lot of it just yet. They're still trying to figure out the big pieces of this budget, which are K-12 education, corrections, transportation, things like that.
Well, it makes it a great time to talk about what Joint Finance was doing. They had a busy week last week. You mentioned tech college funding. Of course, they're working on Governor Evers' budget proposal. We're going to break those actions down later this hour. But first, how does the budget process work in the state legislature? And keeping in mind, we only have about 20 minutes left. What's the Joint Finance Committee considering and looking for as they go through the budget?
So the Joint Finance Committee is our budget committee. It's a joint committee of both houses. You have 16 members in each house. You get the majority party gets 6 appointees of that committee, the minority party 2. So right now, because both houses are Republican, it's a 12-4 GOP majority. And they go through the budget line by line to figure out what they want to do off what the governor proposed. What we're seeing so far, though, is that Republicans differ with Tony Evers on a number of things. So they had a motion 2 weeks ago in which they pulled out a lot of the big-ticket items from Evers' budget in one swoop, the Medicaid expansion, accepting federal money to do that, some of the tax hikes, medical marijuana, decriminalizing small amounts of marijuana, caps on school choice, I mean, changes in unemployment insurance programming. It was a 131-item motion that pulled all those items out of the budget. Now they're going through. What we're seeing is that Republicans are agreeing with Evers in a couple of spots, but for the most part, they've been going back to essentially current law, allowing an increase, we call it a standard budget adjustment. Basically, it means for the cost of inflation, you know, things, expenses go up. They're allowing that increase, but not doing what Evers wants to do. And like, you know, if Governor Evers wants to add, let's say, 5 positions here, they may do 2. They're just kind of paring everything back. But the real interesting stuff starts to happen this week because we have corrections tomorrow and the big one, K-12 education on Thursday. That decision they make with K-12 will shape the rest of the budget because it's such a humongous piece of what we spend in Wisconsin every year. And it'll help shape what's left to do things like, the University of Wisconsin system or tax breaks or anything along those lines.
You mentioned corrections earlier this morning. We had a conversation about why the state's correctional institutions have so much of a problem with recruitment and retention and spending millions. I think one number I saw was something like $50 million a year on overtime. What is Joint Finance considering in terms of corrections?
We haven't gotten the full rundown of what they're going to do yet. They usually give us that or talk about right ahead of time. Those discussions are ongoing, but I do know that, you know, Governor Evers, for example, made a push to give a $5 an hour, basically, increase to those guards working in 5 of our 6 maximum security prisons. That's been criticized by some because it doesn't take care of everybody. Also, numbers that we saw suggest that that move generated a significant boost in the number of guards seeking transfers to those prisons to get that $5 an hour increase. So they got to figure out pay. But one of the bottom lines for staffing our prisons is that whenever you have a good economy, it is harder to find prison guards because there are safer jobs that pay you as much, if not more, that don't involve being in a prison all day long. It's not exactly easy work. And so they're having that double whammy of we've got a great economy going right now in terms of the unemployment rate. So if you don't have people available, it's hard to fill those slots. You can't fill those slots. You have to pay people who are already there to keep working overtime. The overtime costs keep going up, and you know, it's a drain on the resource. I mean, it's just kind of a vicious cycle with staffing our prisons in Wisconsin.
J.R. Ross is editor for WisPolitics.com. What do you think the legislature should be doing regarding the budget in specific? And what about the surplus of tax revenue that's coming in? Share your ideas and thoughts for the legislature with us at 800-642-1110. 1234, 800-642-1234. We touched on the idea or on this aspect of the story about the state budget. The Governor Evers' budget originally contained a number of health care proposals. And what we just mentioned a minute ago was that the biggest one, of course, is Medicaid expansion, which Republicans have ruled out. Did any of Governor's health care proposals make it through this large motion the Republicans passed?
No, they pulled out a lot of. Medicaid is a linchpin for that health care budget for what Evers did, because from his administration's numbers, that investment or taking the federal money. That opens a door for a $1.6 billion investment into healthcare through various state, federal government programs. Now, the thing to watch, though, is, Republicans have complained that, yes, you'd have more people on Medicaid in Wisconsin if you did this, but there are already about half the folks who'd be covered under Medicaid, under the Evers proposal, who are already on the federal exchanges through the Obamacare, that they're already on those plans now. They'd be moving off of private insurance that's heavily subsidized onto a government program, and they realize that they're losing the message game when it comes to this proposal. So you hear Republicans now talk about it's an expansion of the welfare rolls. There are cheaper options out there. They're trying to push back on what's been a very popular argument from Governor Evers and Democrats about you expand coverage for people and you save the state money. It's a very simple argument from Democrats. Republicans have figured out a way to combat that.
Well, and if Obamacare was to go away completely, which is the point of a multi-state lawsuit, then what happens?
Yeah, good question. Republicans have countered to that, saying, if that goes away, then a lot of the stuff goes away, including possibly the federal money. So what do we do then? So that's a big question mark out there. But Evers has pushed this Medicaid. He's out there still talking about it, saying, he's not giving up. He's trying to get people and the general public voters to call the lawmakers and pressure them to accept the money. So far, Republicans have shown no signs of doing that. The thing to watch, though, is, for every dollar you invest, state taxpayer dollar, you invest in the Medicaid program, you draw a federal matching dollars. So what Republicans do in terms of investing more money into health care, Medicaid program, to attract that federal money, because one of the things that happens is if you are a hospital or a nursing home and you treat somebody who's on Medicaid, currently in Wisconsin we have a fairly low reimbursement rate. So the state doesn't cover the full cost of treating somebody. Well, because they don't cover the full cost of treating somebody, people on private insurance pick up that cost. They call it a hidden tax. Mm-hmm. So what my Republicans do to try and pay more into Medicaid to increase reimbursement rates to help out ease that situation.
Yeah, and we're seeing nursing homes close all over the state at a fairly rapid rate in Wisconsin. We talked about that last week on the morning show. J.R. Ross is editor at wispolitics.com. Our state capital report continues in a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to the morning show on the Ideas Network. Stick around. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Kate, by the way, we'll be back tomorrow morning. Governor Evers' budget is in the hands of the legislature's Committee on Joint Finance. In this week's State Capitol Report, we're talking about what they've done with the budget so far and what's next with J.R. Ross, editor for wispolitics.com. And J.R., we've got a lot of people who want to join us by phone and get their 2 cents worth in here. I think we ought to let them. After all, this is a call-in talk show. Let's start with Mike in Racine. Mike, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you. Yes, I'm on the school board in Racine. I just visited Head Start, and the nurse there told me how hard it is for many families to afford the deductibles related to health care for themselves and their children. And I cannot understand how the legislature, after initiating the Blue Ribbon Commission, calling for more funding for special education and various wonderful initiatives to not accept the Medicaid money to support their kids physically while we're trying to educate them. This is beyond the pale. These are our most vulnerable students, special education. We haven't had an increase in 10 years, spending $1 billion more than we have, and we're rejecting $329 million, more than $1 billion over the last 8 years. It's unconscionable.
Okay, Mike, we get it. J.R. Ross, Medicaid funding is still going to be kind of a touchy issue here.
Yeah, and, you know, to his point, you know, Evers has called the Medicaid expansion the linchpin for his budget because it frees up state dollars and then can be pushed into other things like education. And his proposal is a $1.4 billion increase for K-12 education, public education, over the next 2 years. Of that, about $600 million would be for special education. Now, right now, schools get money and have to kind of put it in different pots. And he wants to dedicate it to special ed, saying that that's been underfunded because it draws money from other places to cover the cost of educating those children. So that's why it's so important to Evers to do Medicaid. I mean, besides providing more coverage, is it frees up money for other things. Now, to watch this week with finance, Republicans will approve an increase in funding for schools, but I don't think it's going to be anywhere near $1.4 billion. The question is, what number do they land on in that final vote?
Mike, thank you so much for your call. Let's take a call next from Joan in Eau Claire. Joan, good morning.
Good morning.
You're on the morning show.
Good morning. My comment is to the Republicans, to Voss and Fitzgerald, work with this governor. The people of the state elected this governor because they believe that he has their best interests at heart, as do I. Mr. Voss, Mr. Fitzgerald, put your right-wing politics aside. Work with this governor. Accept the federal Medicaid money. That's my comment, and thank you for allowing me to speak.
Joan, thanks so much for joining us this morning. That's been a common theme from the Democrats: is, hey, our guy got elected. You need to work for, and you need to work with him.
Yeah, and Republicans have answered, well, he needs to work with us too because, you know, we won majorities in both houses, significant majorities in both houses of legislature. It's been really interesting to me. I've been covering the Capitol now for 19 years. I've never seen such a disconnect between the two parties in terms of, you know, how the other side is acting, who's to blame for what's going on, all that kind of jazz. It really is this kind of standoff where Democrats feel like Republicans poisoned the well with the lame duck session in December, and Republicans feel like Governor Tony Evers, I mean, they will tell you that they will say things like he's clueless, which is a tweet that Robin Voss sent out this weekend, or a staff that they don't know what they're doing, they're not on top of things, they can't work with them. It's a total disconnect between the two sides, and so far, in public polling that we've seen, the public seems to believe that Evers is trying to work harder at cooperating. Republicans are. The question is there any kind of penalty to pay for anybody at the ballot box because of the standoff?
So what happens when the Joint Finance Committee is done with the budget? Then what's the next step?
After the committee wraps up its work, it'll be drafted into a bill. Then it'll be on the floor of the legislature. Both houses will vote. Then it'll go to the governor. The timeline right now is for Joint Finance to finish up mid-June, like the 13th, 14th. That takes a week to draft the bill, maybe 10 days. That allows them to vote right before the end of June, that last week of June, and get it to Evers' desk. Now, the question then is, what can Evers do with that budget with partial veto authority? The governor has the most powerful partial veto pen in the country. He can rework bills that include fiscal spending in them. So can he make it to a moment where he's happy and sign it, or would he veto the entire thing, which we've never seen before in Wisconsin?
Well, we'll keep our eyes on it. J.R., thanks for joining us.
Have a great day.
J.R. Ross is editor at WIS Politics. Drunk driving. The legal term is OWI, or operating while intoxicated. Wisconsin is the only state in the nation where a first offense OWI is considered a civil violation and not a crime. But more than one-third of drunken driving convictions in the state are for repeat offenders. As part of WPR's High Tolerance series on alcohol in Wisconsin, we wanted to get an idea of how widespread the problem is and how offenders are sentenced. Morning Edition host Melissa Ingalls talked with Will Cushman of WisContext.com iowacandidates.org to dig through the data related to the issue. Here's Will starting us off with a look at what he was trying to figure out with this story.
You hear a lot about how Wisconsin is the only state in the nation where first-time OWIs, most first-time OWIs are not a criminal offense, they're just a traffic violation. That's kind of used as a way to talk about how Wisconsin's pretty lax when it comes to OWIs. And then on the flip side, and I see this a lot in like reading newspapers, you see a lot of cases where people are arrested for their 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 15th OWI.
Yeah.
And you kind of wonder, like, what is going on in this state? So we really just wanted to know where Wisconsin is at in terms of OWI enforcement and sentencing and kind of where the trends have gone over the last 15, 20 years.
Tell me some of the challenges involved in figuring that out.
Right. It was more challenging than I expected it to be to get data. And part of that is because there are several different state agencies who track different types of data related to OWIs. So, for instance, the Department of Transportation tracks OWI convictions, and the Department of Justice tracks OWI arrests. And then the Department of Corrections tracks sentencing data, but only for a subset of OWI convictions, those OWIs where sentences are for prison time or probation, something where the Department of Corrections is involved. And then all other OWI sentencing is actually really, really difficult to get kind of aggregate data because it's tracked by each of the 72 counties in the state. And with almost 2,000 OWI arrests a month, trying to grab hold of that data is a major challenge.
So it appears that drunk driving arrests are going down in the state, but are they really? I mean, what did you find, again, since you're dealing with such complicated data gathering, what's your take on what's really happening?
Right. So both arrests and convictions, we did see a pretty significant reduction since the late 2000s. As late as, I think, about 2007, there were over 40,000 OWI convictions in the state. That number in 2017 was more like in the low 20,000s. So it's decreased by quite a significant amount, over half over a period of just 10 years.
What surprised you about researching this story?
I think what surprised me was how the state is really seeming to experience fewer and fewer OWI arrests and convictions over the last 10 years. I think that's been a surprise to me. Because I think as a lot of listeners, I read those stories about repeat OWI offenses and then just OWIs like constantly in the news. So it seems like they're – I mean, and don't get me wrong, 20-some thousand OWIs, like almost 2,000 OWIs a month is still a lot of OWIs in the state. But it really did surprise me at how the problem is about half as bad as it was even a decade ago.
All right. Will Cushman, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
That was Will Cushman of WisContext.org talking with the host of Morning Edition, Melissa Ingalls. There's much more to this story, including a detailed look at sentencing trends. You can read the whole thing and see the rest of our High Tolerance series at WPR.org/alcohol. Just ahead, a conversation with a UW lacrosse student who sits on the University System Board of Regents. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.